Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the GeoMob Podcast. Today, we're talking about APIs, and one new API in particular, the EO API. This is something new from Development Seed, and I have Jonas and Henry with me to explain it all. Hi, guys, how are you doing today?
Hey, we're good. Thanks.
Excellent. Hey, yeah, thanks for having us today.
No problem. Maybe you can quickly let the listeners know who you are and what your journey through geospatial has been, and maybe one of you can briefly explain who Development Seed are as well.
Sure, I'll start us off. My name is Henry Rodman. I'm based in Minnesota in the United States. My background is in forestry, and that's how I wound up in the geospatial world. Got really interested in remote sensing after school and wound up using a lot of geospatial data and landed at Development Seed because I was interested in building more tools to make data more accessible. Cool. And yeah, so that's the quick bio for me.
So just quickly, when you say forestry, was that in sort of boots on the ground type forestry, or was it you were interested in strategic planning of resources, that sort of thing? I mean, it's seemed in my head it's a big jump from forestry to writing quite detailed code and software.
I started off going just to forestry school, where you get a very basic education in the technology side of forestry, which includes a lot of remote sensing. But after school, since I was so interested in that, I pursued more the the management type track, where I worked at a startup that used satellite imagery to predict forest inventory, as we call it. So right, using satellites to measure trees.
Oh, very cool. And Jonas, what about you?
Sure, yeah. So yeah, I'm Jonas Hirstin. I started out in physical oceanography, actually. So also in science,
cool.
And from there I got into software and modeling and so on. And then I entered geospatial and remote sensing right when Sentinel-2 was launched, and everyone needed scaling and cloud and servers and so on. And I kind of ventured into that and have been there since, leading engineering teams and projects. Now also with a focus on products, on bringing out the product aspects of the software we develop. So,
cool. So do you, in terms of the physical oceanography side of things, do you try and find projects that you can work on that bring you back to that? Or is that something that's sort of the science is in the past and now it's a sort of software engineering and creating whatever the clients want?
Yeah, so I mean, we for a while, not very actively. I mean, for a while, I didn't do a lot with have a lot to do with oceanography or science, but a lot of the projects we do at Development Seed are targeted towards people who have a lot of domain knowledge in science, and that's where I found it super helpful. Often, too.
Oh, brilliant! And
every now and then a project comes up that's within climate, oceanography, greenhouse gases, and then I feel extra at home. So.
It's brilliant. I love talking to people on this podcast and finding out where they've come from, because in my head I just assume that people sort of go like at the age of 16, I want to be a geospatial person, and then go through it. But invariably everyone comes from such varied backgrounds and in particular have different domains, but the thing that pulls them all together is either Earth observation or more and more software development and coding and that sort of thing. So would one of you be able to just quickly introduce DevSeed and sort of what it is that the organization does?
Yeah, I can perhaps continue cool. there. DevSeed, Development Seed, we're a client services company. So I mentioned we do a lot of projects for various partners. Our mission is that we want to see our world better. So we want to help people see it better and then hopefully make the good decisions based on data that benefit the planet. That's kind of we're operating not-for-profit. So we're basically not shareholder owned. So we can reinvest any profit we make into the projects we do and into developing open source software. That's mostly what we invest in.
That's awesome. I was not aware of that. That's very cool that you're not for profit. Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's not non-profit, right?
And so
we have an office in Washington, D.C. and one in Lisbon, and 60 people globally distributed. There's a few people going to offices, so almost everyone is really all over the world.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, big client is NASA for a couple of years now, but also European Space Agency and lots of smaller and larger companies, big cloud corporations, as well as small players and NGOs.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, with all of the new space companies around and with the the rush towards space from sort of the Indian Space Agency and the Japanese Space Agency and, you know, all the other national space agencies. I know Kenya has one as well. I bet there'll be lots and lots of people knocking on your door looking for things and help. Cool. So let's get on and talk about EO API. Can you explain to the listeners what EO API is and why it's been created?
Yeah, maybe I can start there too, and then Henrik, you can chime in.
Yep, sounds good.
So you said EO API is the new API. Basically, it's actually a lot of APIs. So it's a software project, and it's a collection of different pieces of software that we put together. We basically created this because we found across a lot of our projects that people needed this type of data infrastructure for geospatial data. And we wanted to put our recommendation for how that type of infrastructure for distributing geospatial data should look like. We wanted to put that not only into just text, but also basically into infrastructure as code and into software that people can just take and deploy. Basically as our recommendation, but also as a very community-rooted set of open-source projects, basically.
Okay.
And I think the projects were out there, a lot of them. What we wanted to contribute is the glue and the recommendation, the sensible defaults around them. And that's what EO API is. I don't know how clear that is.
No, that was very clear. So you're not trying to push it as a standard, but I guess it would make sense if lots of people started to use it, because then you have pretty much the same or very similar structure in different data providers, which makes obviously support much easier because everyone can just talk to each other in the community and work out what's happening and that sort of thing. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's an important point about EO API is, you know, we've provided basically a set of easy to deploy defaults for hosting your own stack API and some associated infrastructure that makes it more useful. But that's not to say that someone who wants to deploy a stack has to use EO API. We've just provided it as a convenient method to do so.
So at this point, could you just, for our listeners who may not have heard of Stack, could you just explain what Stack is and why it's useful?
Yeah, absolutely. Stack stands for, it's an acronym that stands for Spatiotemporal Asset Catalog. And it is a specification for cataloging geospatial data. So it's a metadata specification. And the idea behind it was a common specification for data providers to use to describe the files that they are producing, whether it's a satellite image or some other type of geospatial data. It provides one specification to describe the location and the spatio and temporal characteristics of geospatial files.
Okay. And am I right in thinking that if you had a stack catalog that you'd created and I had one that I'd created and, I don't know, for argument's sake, the UK Space Agency had one that they'd created, a user sat somewhere would be able to if they had access to those three catalogs, would be able to basically search through those using common standards and common techniques and be able to find data and get a return in the same sort of same types of output, so that everything would make sense to them. There wouldn't be lots of different types of formats and standards and everything else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are advantages for everybody in that scenario, where the various agencies or users don't have to invent a new metadata system, and then the users don't have to learn a new metadata system for each data source.
Okay, cool. And who is your target audience for EO API? So we've talked about Stack and stuff and what have you, but who do you see using this?
Yeah, so I think for the services that EO API bundles together and provides, right, or promotes, basically, that's data users, right? That's people who discover data and who access data through these standard interfaces like Stack and OGC standard APIs and so on. So that's really people on the consuming, data consuming side. That's kind of the end users, but that's the users of these services, and the EO API really makes it easier for the distributors to provide these services. So I would say for EO API, the target audience are really the data distributors who want to disseminate their data through these types of protocols and want an easy path there. And so that's really our target audience, I would say.
Okay, cool. Could you maybe just very briefly, because I realize you could probably get very, very detailed about this, but just briefly talk about some of the tooling that's gone into creating EO API. So when you say that it's modular and it gives you the infrastructure, what do you actually, what do people who might want to deploy it, what do they see?
Yeah, it consists right now of four basic components. The first one is PG Stack, which is a Postgres backend for hosting Stack or storing Stack metadata. So this is, it's an extension to Postgres that you could install on any Postgres database.
Okay.
And we have next to PG Stack two other applications that communicate with the PG Stack database to provide services to end users. And those are Stack Fast API, PG Stack, which is a Python application that is designed to communicate with the PG Stack database and serve an API, a Stack API that can be published on the web, for okay. example.
Yep.
And the other component, it's really, you know, this is a podcast, it's audio only. It's a much easier to show what the other yes. one is. T-Tiler PG Stack is a dynamic tiling server, which allows you to serve slippy map tiles. So like what you get when you browse any kind of satellite imagery viewer, it allows you to basically query a Stack database, the PG Stack database, and serve images straight to the user in their browser.
Okay, cool. So I am by no way an expert on T-Tiler, but I saw a really interesting presentation about it. We had a local Phosphogy in the Southwest held in Bristol last year, at the end of last year, and someone gave a talk about T-Tiler and how it's dynamic. And that, I think, you're right. Having it visual is a really good way of people understanding what it can do. But whereas sort of tiles before have to be sort of rendered and then served, it was amazing to see that you could just put in different parameters into the call that you were making, and then they get rendered on the fly into whatever sort of however it is that you want them to come through into your slippy map. And I think that really opened the eyes for a lot of people. So yeah, I can see how T-Tiler is super useful. That's another development seed project, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
I think we should probably also mention that the whole concept behind EO API and the technologies we choose there is this cloud native geospatial philosophy, which is that you need very little more than cloud services and cloud storage to serve up geospatial data. And that doesn't mean it has to be in the cloud. It could also be on your on-prem, but it basically uses network and object storage and so on for very lightweight software architectures. And T-Tyler is the prime example of that, right? The idea is that you have this service. It could even be deployed serverless, so it's completely stateless. And you pass to it some kind of file from image file or data file, and it will render that on the fly. And due to the nice optimized format of the data, right, the cloud optimized GeoTIFF or web optimized SAR in the future, and so on, that the server basically can render that on the fly very fast. And
excellent. Yes, yeah.
This cloud native geospatial. Paradigm.
So I can see that that's all about being able to get as many people as possible to interact with the data without them needing to understand necessarily what the data is doing on the back end and that sort of thing. So yeah, okay, mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, and like we said, I think the where DevSeed often makes the difference is actually on the operator side. So this whole stack makes it super easy to provide these very powerful services because you don't need to operate a very expensive server architecture or so, because it's all serverless and stateless and loads data dynamically. So I think that's really where EO API comes in.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So how do you see EO API sort of interacting or integrating or potentially competing with existing projects? And I'm thinking of things like OpenEO or some of the OGC APIs that you've already mentioned. Are they sort of similar or are they so different that it's not a big competition?
Yeah, so maybe the first, I can take the first half. For OGC APIs, I mean, EO API provides a lot of OGC specification APIs. So WMTS is for, T-Tyler, that's the web map tiles, and also the newer OGC API versions. And Stack is also becoming an OGC standard. And the goal is really to very pragmatic about providing all the standards that are most easiest to integrate for people and also most widely used. So there's no competition. It's quite the opposite. We're embracing these standards, but we're also not trying to be a reference implementation, PyGeo API or also GeoServer. These really implement the specs to the details. We're really focusing on the top most important aspects of the spec to make things work.
Okay, yeah, got you.
That's for OGC. Maybe you, Henry, you can get into processing.
Yeah, so EO API, you mentioned OpenEO. EO API is not a processing platform. Yeah, so that's maybe one major contrast between platforms that others are familiar with. So Google Earth Engine, you can do really, it's intended for heavy data processing applications. A main difference between the services that we provide and Google Earth Engine is that it's highly interoperable. It's easy to connect to the EO API services and use them, in other applications. It's not a monolithic kind of closed ecosystem.
Right.
Yeah. That's not to say that you couldn't use the components of EO API in a processing platform. We've got examples of that in some of our recent work, trying to extend T-Tyler for that sort of purpose.
Right.
But that, that's relatively new work. It's not standardized in a great way just yet. The other one I would mention, that's probably the most analogous to the EO API ecosystem is the ESRI ecosystem, where agencies or organizations can host their data in an ESRI way, and they get image services and vector services or feature services. EO API can fill that same need for organizations, but it's much more self-managed and it's all open source. So those are the two distinguishing characteristics.
No, thank you very much for doing that. It's useful to understand where it sits, I think, in relation to some of those other things that people have heard about as well. So I feel like maybe we've touched on this a bit, but it sounds like this is primarily for developers and sort of DevOps people, but is it also abstracting away some of the complexity so that people like me, who are a bit okay-ish with coding, can also throw that up? If I had, I don't know, if I had a tiny little data set, but it was sufficiently large that I couldn't sort of easily send it around to clients or something, is it something that I would be able to throw up necessarily? Or is it a case of that you need to be a sort of sysadmin, in inverted commas, sort of level skills so that you can set up, and then users like myself would then use it to sort of squirt out the data that's sat there on a server out to my clients, that sort of thing. And maybe, Jonas, you could just sort of talk a little bit about like who operates EO API, and then maybe Henry, you could come in and sort of add on to that.
Yeah, so I mean, we in principle that the goal is really to make it super simple to stand up this set of services, right? But it's still a pretty complex microservice architecture, and with that comes all the challenges there can be. So even if it's just one Docker compose statement to get the whole thing up and running, like, when something fails, you'll be completely lost, you know. And there's also, we're still working on some of the like management and also data management interfaces. That's something the community is kind of coming up with now, that you can have like a UI for adding data to Stack, for example. And without that, you would be left with some command line scripts to shuffle data into EO API and so on. And it would be a lot less point and click than ESRI or Geo Server or so. So I think it's for, you need at least an engineer or two to set this up and keep it running sustainably, I think.
Okay. I need to up my Kubernetes game then.
Yeah, but that's not said. I mean, just to say, EO API, the idea is really not that you have to use the whole thing. Like, really, it's our, if you need all of this, then take the whole ecosystem. If you only need T Tyler, it's also a standalone project, and on their own, it's a lot easier maybe to run some of these services, whichever one you need. And for example, for sharing data that's sitting in the cloud, yeah, you wouldn't even need to be managing the T-Tyler yourself. It would just need to be somewhere close to the data, so you can point it at the data you want to share, and then people can basically access your data through that service. That's the nice thing. You don't need to register the data in the service. You basically just point the service, the T-Tyler, at your data, and it will render it and then serve the tiles.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So in that sense, yeah. If you were just there with a few files to share, I would route them via someone else's T-Tyler. We have one that you could use, actually. Yes. Yeah, Henry, how do you?
Yeah, so I discovered EO API because I, like you, Al, were interested in hosting data for my organization, and I wanted to do so in a stack for all the reasons we discussed earlier, so I could use these other tools that could communicate really well with the Stack API. But what I didn't have was the expertise in deploying systems like this to the cloud. That was a new concept to me. Mm-hmm. And I found EO API just on accident. This was in 2023. I think it was before, you know, Development Seed had really published it or like promoted it as a standalone service. And what I found were basically they had done the hard work. I say they because I didn't work there yet, but they had done the hard work to write the infrastructure as code, which is a really powerful concept where, you know, you can basically import a script that's been written and tested and run it yourself, and it will create the resources in the cloud. So as far as places to start with learning these concepts for a geospatial, you know, engineering novice, it's a great place to start because that's where I started. I can attest to the fact that it's possible. So if you have an AWS account, you can use EOAPI CDK. We'll share a link to that in the notes for the episode, I'm sure. But basically, if you have an account, you can run a set of commands that will just stand these things up you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to revise my statement a bit that you need an engineer to do this. Maybe it would be great, Alistair, if you could try this out someday and tell us how it went.
yeah. Actually, that's a good idea. I'll have to have a play around over the summer and get back to you. If AWS blows up, it's not my fault. Cool. So are there any current use cases that where people are using this sort of actively day to day? It sounds like maybe Henry is already. Are there any sort of stories you can tell about who's using it and sort of that type of thing?
Yeah, so I mean, we have the biggest project we're supporting where folks are using this is probably the NASA VEDA project, the visualization, exploration, and data analysis project at NASA, and where the goal is really to provide a platform for like Earth science data research, and then also provide the blueprint for such platforms. So very much the same idea as EOAPI is, and that's why it's part of that blueprint, basically, and also the infrastructure that this this NASA platform is using. And this is now turning into many platforms. And ESA is doing the same thing, actually. There's this project called the EOEPCA, the Earth Observation Exploitation Platform Common Architecture. Anyways, same idea, blueprints for geospatial data platforms. And EOAPI is now a component of that. So ESA is also promoting EOAPI as the go-to open source solution for all these types of platforms.
Oh, cool.
And in both cases, we have deployments of the software that we're managing and for development, and then also some instances where at NASA in particular that are basically in production and people are using this as the basis. But these are the basically publicly funded research and development projects we have, the biggest ones. And there's lots of smaller ones. Henry, maybe you can get into those.
Yeah. There are a lot of individuals out there that are using EOAPI or the components thereof in their own deployments that we don't have a lot of visuals or we don't have a line of sight on that. And the code is public. We can, it's available to for anybody to use. But we have a lot of instances in the open source repositories of people who are asking questions, reporting issues. So there's a fair bit of traction out there. We talked about Stack earlier. I would say that, it's growing in popularity. Anyone who's at a fork in the road and deciding how they're going to catalog their data or how they're going to share it out to their users, it's a great choice. And so EOAPI being the easiest way to do so, it provides an easy on-ramp for organizations. But we don't know exactly how many there are out there.
That'd be really cool if anyone's listening to the episode who is using it, just to sort of maybe interact with GeoMob and Development Seed on social media and just sort of let people know that you're using it. Because, it's always useful to know who's using the tools that you've developed.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, but maybe we should mention, I mean, some companies have also approached us to get a bit of help on in onboarding to EOAPI. and we're happy to provide that. I mean, not free of charge. We still have to pay people salaries, but not a lot more than that. So we're very happy to do that as well. Figure out which deployment mechanism is the best for you, maybe develop some add-ons or make it fit your exact use cases. So that's something we can help with, but also support if people are doing this and just need a few pointers, then just maybe we can get to that, like how you can reach out and.
Yeah, and, sure. Mm-hmm. I was just going to come on to that. So you have mentioned there's a community effort or a community project. How can interested parties contribute, and sort of are there specific areas where you'd like people to start interacting with the project and contributing into that? Even though DevSeed has 60 people, and I'm sure you all have other work to do as well, so you can't cover everything necessarily just through the one organization. So, I mean, are there specific areas where you're thinking, well, that'd be brilliant if someone, you know, if a group of people could come in and start developing in that area, and that means we can concentrate on the bits that we're really sort of interested in, what have you?
Yeah, the first one I can think of is, you know, examples or, you know, reporting back on how easy or difficult it is to deploy to begin with. You know, we have our own experiences with that, in our projects at Development Seed, and we know how to use it. But it would be it's great to get feedback on the usability and provide suggestions for, you know, documentation or even changes to the code itself. So that's a great place, you know, where the outside perspective is really helpful.
And we really like working in the open. So like making our considerations about the software like out in the open, and blog posts and all these kind of things. And that also includes if people want to reach out, like if they're comfortable, then just opening tickets in the GitHub repositories of these projects would be the best place. Like especially discussion threads, very low level way to just ask any question. And we have some people who are very responsive on these discussions. And that's a lot, feeds right into their stack of things to answer in the day-to-day work. So it's a lot easier than answering to a call or an email if it's just a little.
That's cool.
Okay. And maybe it benefits more people.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you've mentioned at the top of the episode and throughout as well how important everything being built upon the stack standard is. Is it important that people know the stack standard, or is the stack standard relatively simple to get up and running? Like, it's well documented, there's places people can go to find out about that, because would it be super useful to you guys and the project more widely if they sort of already have a good understanding of stack, or are you looking for a wide variety of contributors? Sorry, Henry.
Yeah, you know, our position is just as application developers, is that the more people who are familiar with the stack specification, the better.
Cool.
One of the great things about stack is that it was an implementation first specification, meaning the tool builders building applications that use it, that serve geospatial data, they're the ones who came up with the specification. It didn't come from above. It didn't come from OGC to start. So it has this really rich ecosystem of developers who are working on it. So it behooves everybody to become familiar with it, whether you're a consumer or a data provider, but particularly data providers, I think. Because if the data can be cataloged effectively in stack, that'll be helpful for a lot of users.
Brilliant. Yeah. So listeners, there's a call to arms there. So, get on board with stack. Make sure that your data is listed in stack catalogs and what have you. And thank you both for everything you've said about EO API. It sounds like a fascinating project. I am going to go and try it out at some point. not this week, I'm too busy, but I will try it out and I will try and feed back as well how that went. If people want to get in touch with you, how best can they do that?
Yeah, so as mentioned, I think for technical questions, like try to find the most relevant repository on GitHub and just start posting. Any question is a good question. And otherwise, Development Seed is quite vocal on LinkedIn as well. So that's also a good place to tag us, and Blue Sky. So we'll put some links into the notes, I guess.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yes, I will make sure that there's a big long list of links and things in the show notes, definitely. Guys, it's been absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much for coming on. Best of luck with the project and all the development around it. And hopefully some of our listeners will start to contribute. So thank you again.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.